Hello, I'm Kirsty Young, and this is a podcast from the Desert Island Discs archive. For rights reasons, we've had to shorten the music. The programme was originally broadcast in 1977, and the presenter was Roy Plumley.
On this occasion, I'm visiting Jacqueline Dupré, and instead of being in a broadcasting house studio, I'm in a Muse house not far from Hyde Park. Jacqueline, it's just 8 records, and this is a great problem for anyone who lives with music to the extent that you do.
Well, in a sense, I feel it's a very lucky thing, because on the 8 records, I can perhaps bring my friends with me to the island.
That's the way you're going to set about it. A very good way, too. Well, where do we start? What's the first one?
Well, the very first one actually is the first piece of music I ever heard in a public concert. And in that concert, my teacher was playing William Pleath, and it was a Schubert C major 2 cello quintet. The second theme from the first movement so affected me that I'm afraid I nearly drowned out the music with my tears. But I loved it.
Part of the first movement of the Schubert 2 cello quintet in C major, William Pleath with the Amadeus Quartet. Jacqueline, your name, Dupré, is Channel Islands, isn't it?
That's correct. It's from the island of Jersey.
Do you still have links there? Have you spent much time in Jersey?
Not a great deal of time, but I know that half my family is there.
Your mother, of course, is a professional musician.
She used to be. She gave that up many years ago, but it was thanks to my mother that I learned the notes of the cello, and in fact she fostered the love I had for it by writing pieces for me and drawing pictures to those pieces and composing poems and placing those pieces by the bedside every morning, so I'd wake up to this fresh gift into life.
She, of course, was a pianist. Did you start at the piano? Did you start picking out tunes at the keyboard before you had ever heard the cello?
Yes, I did that because my sister played the piano.
Mm-hmm.
So I gravitated towards it and played around with it.
Where did you first hear the cello?
On the radio, when there was a program devoted to each instrument of the orchestra. And I was then 4 years old, heard the instrument, and said, I'm afraid without a please, I will have one of those.
And your parents bought you one?
They bought me a cello, yes.
Can one get one small enough for someone of 4?
Well, funnily enough, they do come hardly bigger than a viola, but at the time you could only get a full size. But a child's hand, I think, is flexible enough to manage a big instrument. And I was never so hurt as when that instrument was swapped for an 8th size.
Where did you go to school, Jacqueline?
Well, schooling was very much cut short, and I won a certain scholarship which paid for my musical education when I was 10, but it demanded a certain amount of practice, which I loathed each day, but that meant that there wasn't time to go to school as a normal pupil. And so, although I kept up a certain amount of study, I'm not the most educated thing you ever met.
Where and when did you make your first professional appearance?
I remember giving a concert when I was 6, but I cannot remember where. except that it was in London, and it was in a hall which had a lot of paintings, which had to be covered because they were of nude females, and this was not considered proper for a six-year-old to see. But I was fascinated.
What's your second record going to be?
Brahms' Sonata for Cello and Piano. This because my first meeting with my husband was at a party. I had just returned from abroad, was intensely shy, and this very vital, entirely non-shy person walked in, took a look at me and said, "You don't look like a musician." So I thought, help, there's only one thing to do, take out my cello. So we sat down and played Brahms' E minor, and it was as if we'd known each other all our lives. There was absolutely nothing to say. Well, my second record was going to, in fact, be the Brahms' E minor sonata with my husband. But since then, we've listened to the slow movement of the F major, so the E minor has had a strange transformation, become F major.
Right. And you haven't mentioned your husband's name. It is, of course, Daniel Barenboim.
It happens to be Daniel Barenboim, yes.
The opening of the slow movement of the Brahms F major cello sonata, Barenboim and Dupré. Your husband is featured in your next choice, isn't he? But this time as a conductor.
That's correct. He's conducting Don Giovanni, and that has very many happy occasions because I went to every rehearsal, got to know the cast very well, had a very happy time with them. And I choose this record again because my husband is on it, and I would like him to be with me as much as possible on this island. But also the excerpt I choose is because our pet name for each other is concealed.
I see. This is a game. We have to guess what it is.
I don't think you will, actually. I mean, I don't think you will guess, but it's there, the pet name.
An excerpt from the closing section of the first act of Mozart's Don Giovanni, Roger Soyer as the Don and Helen Donat as Zerlina, and Daniel Barenboim was conducting that 1973 Edinburgh Festival production. Jacqueline, going back to your early training days, you went to Switzerland to attend classes given by Casals. It must have been a great excitement to meet the old master himself.
Well, it was indeed. In fact, the whole thing was exciting because it was in a lovely setting in Zermatt, and it was my first view of mountains, and of course this great figure, Casals.
You didn't find him at all daunting?
No, I rather enjoyed it, actually. It was quite a challenge, and it gave me pleasure to try and play as well as I could do, and then to talk about the music with him.
Your father made a great contribution to your training, of course, when he had a practice room soundproofed for you in the family flat.
Well, in fact, this had to be done because should any sound have percolated down to lower floors where people were busy in offices, we would have been ousted from where we lived. So it was a must.
You had a wonderful gift from an anonymous admirer of a really beautiful cello.
I certainly did. In fact, to me it is my fairy godmother. It was a Stradivarius cello, and to this day it is anonymous. And I obviously loved it and put all my musical love and thoughts into it.
When did you make your formal debut? At the Wigmore Hall, wasn't it?
I had actually given a few performances in London beforehand, but this is considered the formal debut at the Wigmore Hall.
And you had rave reviews, and you were in immediate demand for first full hall and promenade concerts and whatever.
That's correct, yes.
Despite all these engagements coming in, you felt your studies weren't over yet. You worked in Paris with Tortelier.
That's right. I went there for about 5 months.
And you went to Moscow to work with Rostropovich. You stayed in a student hostel, didn't you?
I did indeed.
Were there any other English students there?
There was one other, thank goodness, because I hadn't learnt Russian. I didn't know one Cyrillic letter from another. And she translated my lessons for me. And we've remained very firm friends since then. You mentioned the hostel. Unfortunately, the Russian student is so keen that at 5 a.m. every morning, I would be woken by a very enthusiastic trumpeter who would tune up directly underneath my bedroom. So that was a glorious start to the day. Lovely trumpet voluntary.
We've got to record number 4. What's that going to be?
A Chopin Polonaise played by Rubinstein. We had just got married in Israel, literally after the 67th. I think it could have been the day after the 67th war was won. We went to Spain to spend our honeymoon in an area where the Rubinsteins also had a house, and we more or less spent it together with him and his family. And they have remained a very close family to us ever since then.
Arthur Rubinstein playing the Chopin Polonaise in A major. You were married in Israel to Daniel Barenboim. You adopted the Jewish faith yourself, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
By the time of your marriage, you were really in the jet set. You were having great success. You were shuttling about all over the world. So was he. It was rather difficult to even get a few days off at the same time to get married, wasn't it?
Well, it wasn't, because our lives were so organized that we were lucky we could play together, piano, cello. I could be conducted by him. And even though our engagements may have taken us to different towns, we could so arrange it that we were at least in the same country and would be in close communication, should we wish to be.
This was a piece of organization that you and your agents were able to get together on.
That's correct, yes.
Let's have record number 5 now.
That is the Trout Quintet. And I've chosen it because I am, in fact, greedy for my friend's company on this island. Also, again, Daniel is with me. Pinkus Zuckerman, Itzhak Perlman, Zubin Mehta. And I would just love to be able to listen and recapture the times we've had together through the Trout Quintet.
Part of Schubert's Trout Quintet, five friends, you and your husband, of course, and the other three.
The other three are Itzhak Perlman playing the violin, Pinchas Zuckerman playing the viola, Zubin Mehta playing the double bass. Well, that's it.
That's it.
And another friend, actually, who happened to be turning the pages, who is Lawrence Foster, the conductor.
Now, Jacqueline, in July 71, it was announced that you had nervous exhaustion and were going to rest for a year, and everyone has said, oh, poor girl, she's been overdoing it. You were back in the concert hall the following year, but only for a few months. Then we realised that it wasn't just nervous exhaustion.
No, it turned out, in fact, to be multiple sclerosis, which has rather taunting and elusive symptoms. It can suddenly present itself in a certain form and then take itself off, leaving you free of the symptoms for a while.
But it struck you down right at the peak of your career. It must have taken a tremendous effort to come to terms with.
It does take a tremendous effort because one is naturally very frightened by it, and I was very frightened by it. It took me a long time to come to any kind of grips with what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
But then I can say that in a sense I'm lucky because the cello repertoire is small. I had done most of what I loved, and I can look back on a full musical, cellistic life.
And some excellent recordings. And you are very busy teaching.
I'm quite busy teaching now. It's something I realize that I love very much. And to my surprise and gratification, I'm able to put into words what I try to say. I thought previously that it would need my instrument to illustrate what I was trying to get over to the student, but I can do it in words, and this gives me great pleasure.
What are we going to hear now? Some more music?
This time I've decided on a little bit of light relief. It is something from a record made by Victor Borge, and it's called Phonetic Punctuation. And I've heard it many times, and I still am unable to listen to it without getting a stomachache from too much laughter.
Tell us what's going on.
He reads a story, and wherever there is a punctuation mark, he inserts a noise in place of the punctuation mark. And
a different noise for a comma and a full
stop. For a comma,
stop.
For a full stop.
Question mark.
Exactly, yes.
Let's hear a piece of it.
In two strides he was near her, embraced, kissed, and caressed her. Henry! What is love? She asked.
Victor Borge. Jacqueline, in your case, we'll certainly let you have a companion to take to the desert island to help you look after yourself. One companion, who would you like?
Well, it's very strange to say, but one companion I would insist on would be, of course, my husband.
I thought you were going to say that. How good is he at building huts and fishing and all that sort of thing?
Well, I think that is something we'd have to learn.
Even if he's no good at it, you still want him.
And how?
Do you think he could build a boat or a raft to get you home again?
If he were there, we'd have to
Yes.
find a way.
Right. Back to music, number 7.
Number 7 would include another friend of ours, Clifford Curzon.
Mm-hmm.
We have loved the music we've heard and made together. And there's been many occasions when Daniel and I have sat at home and listened to him playing. And I choose a Schubert impromptu with him, because that would bring back not only memories of the two of us together, but the three of us together and his family.
The opening of Schubert's Impromptu No. 3 in B-flat, played by Clifford Curzon. And that brings you to your last record.
Well, funnily enough, again, it is with my husband, and there I'm totally biased, and I didn't have any idea what to choose because I want the whole lot. So I simply put my hand into the profusion of records he's made and came out with a Mozart concerto, which he plays and conducts from the keyboard.
Daniel Barenboim playing the opening of the slow movement of Mozart's Concerto No. 27 in B-flat major. If you could choose only one disc out of the 8, which would it be?
Well, since you have very kindly allowed me, my husband on the island, to help me, I think perhaps the Trout, because there we would be happy enough to have some of our friends with us.
Right. And you're allowed one luxury.
Well, all I can say is that my latest kick is trying to write poetry, so I would love to have pencil and paper.
Splendid, as much as you like. And one book, apart from the conventional choices of the Bible and Shakespeare, and also we don't allow big encyclopedias.
Well, since then, words are my latest discovery and joy. Perhaps Roger's Thesaurus, which would have the lot, and many synonyms and things to go into and investigate.
Roger's Thesaurus to help you with your poetry.
Thank you very much, yes.
And thank you, Jacqueline Dupre, for letting us hear your Desert Island Discs. Goodbye, everyone.
You've been listening to a podcast from the Desert Island Discs archive. For more podcasts, please visit bbc.co.uk/radio4.